I love her. I love her very much. I've never had a feeling like
shut
this.
Up.
And speaking of love, weren't you and I going to talk about that today?
Yes, we were.
But, well, couldn't you manage to arrange your time so you could have a little fun, too?
What were you telling me earlier about what's okay. in and what's out?
Okay, so I'm really keen to tell you this because I had a little change of heart, and everyone knows, like, I'm some type of way about my snacks. Okay, let me tell you, what's out? Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its are out.
I will say, also, you saying Cheez-Its are out is shocking.
Yeah.
To me.
Because, look, they had their chance to sponsor me, and they didn't, okay? Cheez-Its are out. Wow. Ritz cheese snackwiches are in.
Are they really called snackwiches? Is that they what it really says are. In the packaging right there?
Look at that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Snack sandwiches?
Yeah. And amazing. Let me tell you, they're a delight. Sometimes it's just nice to have something that feels like you're, like, having a snack from your childhood.
Yeah. Agreed. Fair enough.
Yeah. Speaking of things from our childhood, what movie are we doing this week?
We are doing Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
What?
So, if you're new to this...
Welcome to VomCom, the podcast about the romantic comedies that you love to hate.
And hate to love.
I'm Molly.
I'm Kat.
How about that? That's kind of good.
That was good, except I've forgotten everything about everything since we haven't done this in months.
Yeah, guys, we're back, you know though.
We are back.
If we do it for the fans.
We do it for the fans, and against all odds, we are back.
Yeah, more popular
literally
than ever.
All odds. They really out there. You know the, like, you know the they that DJ Khaled talks about?
Mm-hmm. The ones who are preying on your downfall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do be out there preying on our downfall.
And they did that thing where, you know how sometimes people will, like, send a box of glitter to the house of someone that they don't like?
Yeah.
We got, like, the metaphorical version of that, except instead of glitter, it was kind of like a variety pack of unfortunate circumstances.
Unfortunate life circumstances, unfortunate work circumstances, mm-hmm. living situations, mental mm-hmm. illness, babes.
You know, the cherry on top.
Unemployment, employment, too much employment, not enough employment, stress, another stress, love.
High cortisol, can't sleep, ADHD, medication's expensive, can't remember to get around to get diagnosed with ADHD.
Lost the ADHD paperwork. Tried to call the doctor again for more paperwork. She said Google it. And you said, okay, remind me of the names of them again. And she didn't.
Wow.
Well, she was like, I'll tell you here on the phone. And I said, can you email it to me? And she said, you can look it up. And I said, I don't remember what you said.
She hit you with the one strike you're out policy, I guess.
She really did. I think she emailed it to me because then after she hung up, I think I got the email, but it was like half an hour later, so it had already been gone out of my brain,
oh,
bro.
Oh boy, oh boy.
But anyways, what a time.
But we're back.
We're back. So before we go crazy and get into things, let's do a land acknowledgement.
Right on.
We'd like to acknowledge that the recording of this podcast takes place both in the region of Peel, which is part of the treaty lands and the territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit,
and Ottawa, which was built on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation territory.
Yay!
Very happy to be back.
Very happy. I don't want to dwell too much on what this last year has been like. I think we kind of summed it up with our random shouting of words.
Mm-hmm.
All I can say is I'm happy to be back and doing this. And looking forward to future endeavors with you.
Yo, are you breaking up with me in my yearbook right now?
Molly.
Yo.
Question one. Have you ever seen this movie before?
Yes, I have, but I didn't remember it until I was watching it. Because I kind of thought to myself, oh, I've never... This is one of the ones that I have always heard of, but I've never actually watched it. Because... You know, at first blush, it doesn't really appeal to me.
Fair
but
point.
Can I just... As I was rewatching it, I was like, oh, no, I've definitely watched this movie before. I remembered everything that happened. And I was like, okay, you know what? This is actually better than I remember. And I'm not saying it's very good, but there was, this movie has its merits. What about you?
Yes.
You've obviously seen this movie before.
I've seen this movie. I don't even remember when I saw this movie, how I saw this movie. I just remember having seen it because I remember particular scenes and, like, I just remember watching the movie. But I also did what you did where I was like, yeah, I've seen this movie, and then rewatching it, there were lots of things where I'm like, I remember this, and there were other things I'm like, this I do not remember. So it came out in 2009, and it stars our boy, Matthew McConaughey, and our girl, Jennifer Garner, who, I will say, was made for rom-coms.
Yeah. She always gets cast as the girl next door, and in this one, like, she literally is, I'm pretty sure. And then she just is so quintessentially that. She's, like, very, you know, likable, a little bit neutral looking, in a good way. Like a Barbie, like a brunette Barbie.
Yeah, like, truly like a brunette Barbie, and, so yeah, it stars the two of them, and then Michael Douglas is in this movie. Emma Stone.
Choice.
Yeah, such a young Emma Stone.
Gretchen Wieners, isn't it?
Yeah, Gretchen Wieners, who play
so good.
Lacey Chabert. So she plays the girl who's gonna marry Breckenmeyer, who plays Paul, which is Matthew McConaughey's youngest brother. So it's their wedding that we're going to. She always plays the very high-strung, heavy-breathing, just always-on-edge girl. And, like, okay, good for you, but also, we seen it done, you know?
Yeah, and especially in the context of these type of rom-coms, where all rom-coms, where if you are kind of high-strung, maybe you raise your voice occasionally, if you ever have emotional outbursts, you're a bitch. So, like, at one point, she literally apologizes for being a bitch. And I was like, what? Like, Kate, you had an outburst. It was a little weird. But she's like, sorry, I'm not normally, like, a raging bitch or something. I was like, what? That's not what I would characterize as. I'm getting too into it. Anyways.
No, so one of the things I wrote down, I was like, you can really tell that this movie was written by two men. Because it's very much like, so, okay, hold on. Before getting into it. So this movie came out 2009. I think this happened. Let me see this on the list of, like, Matthew McConaughey's acting credits.
I was hoping I have it also pulled up just in case, because I was hoping you were gonna mention this. It, you know, where this movie falls, and it's his trajectory of his.
Can you, if you have it on you, can you say it? Because he has a lot, and I'm scrolling a while.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that it would be so hard to scroll. Hold on.
I have carpal tunnel.
Okay, so this came out in 2009. And then, so that was his only movie in 2009. Previous really big movies for him include Failure to Launch, Sahara, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, which we've also covered. He was in a couple episodes of Sex and the City, The Wedding Planner. Like, this is his kind of stuff up till this point. And then right after this, the year after, he did The Lincoln Lawyer. And I think that was the kind of hairpin turn in his career, because it was still 2 years before he did Dallas Buyers Club. But that was the one that really, like, put him in the serious actor category. And I think we've talked about this a little bit before when we did either How to Lose a Guy. Yeah, it was How to Lose a Guy, because we haven't done Wedding Planner yet.
That's you're right, looking at this list, because one, I also didn't know Failure to Launch came before this movie, but, like, really, Ghosts of Girlfriends Past was literally, like, his last kind of rom-com, and then he took 2 years off, maybe did some acting classes, maybe found himself. He was doing yoga, he was drinking kombucha.
And he had a little makeover a la Steve Carell.
Yep. So 2009, Ghost of Girlfriends Past, and then 2011, The Lincoln Lawyer. Bernie, Killer Joe, Eastbound and Down, Magic Mike in 2012, Dallas Buyers Club in 2013, The Wolf of Wall Street, and then it's like True Detective, Interstellar, and like everything else.
True Detective, one of my top five TV shows of all time, season one. I pretend there's only one. Yeah, I know that's a very like big statement, but I can't tell you how much it blew me away. The first time I watched it, I was gobsmacked. Season one only. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's controversial or not.
I don't think it is. I think people feel that way too. I think I need to rewatch. I need to get back into True Detective because I think I started it and then I don't think I watched it at a time where I was ready to accept it into my heart. Yeah. But yeah, this is basically Matthew McConaughey's last rom-com. And you know what? After seeing this movie and probably the reception it got, makes sense. Makes sense that this would have been the last one. And he's like, you know what? I can't keep doing this as a man.
He was probably making bank.
Mm.
But if you have the spark in your soul to be a serious actor and you're already making bank, what do you have to lose by, you know, trying to rebrand like he did? Very successfully, I might add.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very successfully. Mm. So the critical reaction for this movie is the film received, according to Wikipedia, the film received negative reviews and holds a 28% rating on the review aggregator website Rotten Tomatoes, with an average of 4.3 out of 10.
Oh, slow. Yeah. It's not looking
good. The website's critics' consensus reads, a retreat of A Christmas Carol featuring Matthew McConaughey in a retreat on his dazed and confused role. Ghosts of Girlfriend's Past lacks originality, humor, and any semblance of charm. Sang!
You know, they might have... They have some legs to stand on with that critical
They reaction. Have many legs, mm-hmm, honestly.
Like a centipede.
Like a centipede. Like a human centipede.
Like a very morally upright, correct human centipede.
So, let me read also the log line.
Oh yeah, hit me with the log line because I didn't look that up. I want it to be a surprise.
While attending his brother's wedding, a serial womanizer is haunted by the ghosts of his past girlfriends. Great.
That's good.
Nice. Concise. Yeah. I think it was good. Fitting.
Wouldn't change it.
Wouldn't change it. I have no notes. the things I do have notes on.
Oh, tell me. Why we're here, baby.
So, like I said, this movie is very much a movie that is very obviously written by two men, mm-hmm, because all of the women in it are either bitches,
mm-hmm,
or bitches to Connor or very obsessed with him,
mm-hmm,
and like look upon him like he is a god.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have like such simple kind of one-dimensional attributes to them. You know, it's like, this one is the sexy one. This one is the one who is crying about him. This one is the Asian one. Oh, mm-hmm, my God.
Her personality gets to be Asian.
Literally, her personality was Asian. And I,
like, what are we? Yeah, we don't know anything. Anyways, I try not to get too hung up on this because, yeah, it's a comedy, you know. But it's also a comedy about character growth. That's literally the whole premise. And
yeah,
there's literally one line where Jennifer Garner's character... Jennifer Garner's character, creatively named Jenny.
I didn't know if it was Jenny or if it was Ginny because of the way Matthew McConaughey says it.
He does make things oddly kind of East Coast Irish American. Sounds like it could be Ginny. He also has this thing where he like kind of whistles when he talks.
Yeah. Because like, it's very, like, he's very, what, Kentucky or Texas or something. He's just very every character of his has that twang.
Mm-hmm. But there's literally one line where Jenny says, there's two types of women in the world: women who you shag and leave, and women who you shag and cuddle, or something like that.
Oh,
and I was like, so you're talking about the Madonna whore complex.
Yeah,
and they do that throughout the movie. They do this thing where it's like, this is Jenny. She's not like other girls because other girls suck. They are vapid, slutty, just so slutty, gross. Mm-hmm. And they are, you know, obsessed with marriage and gullible. And I'm like, eh.
Yep.
And then all the dudes who aren't him or his brother are also just like I guess they're kind of supposed to be like the clowns or something, the jesters. Because the girls are just silly and slutty, and then the guys are dorky and can't talk to women. And I was like, oh, okay, so this is like the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. It was like the Big Bang. It was like he was their prophet and stuff. And like the scene where he... Okay. So we start off this movie. It has one of those montages. I realize that they do this a lot in rom-coms. The montage where it establishes the main character and what's important to them. Mm-hmm. So like we saw it in Leap Year, and what else did we see it in? I wrote it down. I think we saw it in like How to Lose a Guy in 10 days, I think, with McConaughey. Yep. As well, where he comes in and he's like the ad guy, and he just comes in and says one line and they're like, amazing.
Round of applause. And this is basically the same thing, but with a camera, because he's a photographer. It's just like showing this fantasy world where photographers just walk in and roll the joint and change everything at the last minute. It's like, okay, well, that's actually not what fashion photography is like, but...
No. Anyway. Exactly. He literally walks in late. Everyone is already there. They've already done the work. He walks in. Christina Milian. Million? Yeah. Million? Millie?
Yeah.
A Millie?
Million, yeah.
She...
Christina, yep. The Millie.
She's dressed, and she's, like, so excited to be here, and then he's like, great. Mm-hmm. And then he points the camera at her. His staff or whatever take off her clothes, and she's like, what? And then they shoot an arrow at the apple on her head, and, like, that's the great photo. Amazing. He's an innovative photographer. Yeah.
And we're supposed to be like, oh my god, this is so crazy and funny. He's like,
what a mad genius.
Improvising. What a genius. And he's just like, no, you just made a young actress incredibly uncomfortable, changed all of the parameters, and then put her in physical danger by shooting an arrow at her head. But anyways, that's not the point, because you're a maverick, Matthew McConaughey. Yeah.
You're Connor Mead. So yeah. In that scene also where they end up making out in his office, and then his assistant comes in and says that all these women that he had gone on dates with for weeks are all calling him or asking for him or whatever. He's like, oh, I got to break up with them. So then he conference calls all of them and breaks up with them all together, which as a person who likes to, what's the word?
Multitask.
Multitask. Can't think of words. As a person who likes to multitask, I found that very funny. Offensive, but funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That I did find that a little funny, yeah.
Yeah. Just the idea that,
this has not been done before. This is when, like, you know, technology was growing a little bit. Video conferencing became a thing. And it's like, oh, you used it. I like that. All right.
Go with it. So then he breaks up with them. He goes to his brother's wedding at their rich uncle's estate, who... The rich uncle is dead.
Rip.
He was the OG womanizer, and everything Connor Mead knows, he learned from him, and he's a great man, and, you know, his
Uncle
idol.
Wien. Yeah. Uncle Wayne was the OG Instagram pickup artist.
Honestly.
Talking about, like, with the peacocking and, what is that thing called? Negging. Like,
the negging, the two compliments and an insult. Literally. Mm-hmm. So he's telling a young Connor Mead who just got his heart broken by Jenny, the girl that he loves and has liked for a while. Uncle Wayne brings him to a bar eventually because little Connor Mead's like, I don't like feeling this way. I don't want to feel this way. Brings him to a bar, and then he's giving him the rundown of all of the rules. And he tells this kid in grade 8 who's like, what, 13, 14? I think, in grade 8?
He was in grade 8 at the oldest.
Yeah, and then tells him you have to compliment a woman twice about something above her neck. Nice smile, eyes, all that stuff. And then right when she feels comfortable, blah, 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 you hit her with an insult. Well, bam! Well, bam! Oh, and
just
I was like,
she's comfortable, you 360 deke, go around her, back of the head, insult.
And then that's how you get them that's when you switch the power dynamics around, and that's what, how you manipulate them. And I was like, oh
yeah,
my god, like I know yeah. Connor's supposed to grow from this and we're getting his villain origin story. I know, but it's just so hard to hear these things in 2022.
He says the person in the relationship who cares the least has the most power, and that's like kind of Connor's like philosophy. You come to understand that it's kind of his philosophy in dating. That is like, that kind of establishes the core of him. Anyways, he goes to his brother's wedding and immediately he chafes with all of the guests. Like, he doesn't want to be there. He's so bitter about love, and love is fake. It's, you know, blue pill something. Anyways, he was basically talking about, like, love isn't real. This is a sham. It's an outdated, archaic institution. And he's, like, drinking and, like,
all scotch at the dinner no table. Carbs.
They're like, you gotta go, buddy. Jenny says. And so he goes. Jenny, who is, like, played by Jennifer Garner, as we've previously established, is like the voice of reason and like very logical. She's kind of like the dominant woman that he is absolutely begging for in his life.
Yeah, because she's the one who got away, but only because he let her get away. He literally let go of her, even though she was like, no, you should stay. And he's like, yeah, I will. And then fucks right off.
So he played himself.
He did. I do appreciate how mean she is to him, which is very funny, because they have good banter, and I kind of like the two of them together, like Matthew McConaughey and Jennifer Garner, because they're both tall. She's not that small of a woman compared to him, so then she can kind of look him directly in the eye, and it's like, I like the like power dynamic there, and she's just as mean, and we know that Matthew McConaughey is a close talker, okay? Yes. Connor Mead will talk to you while his whole head is like inside your mouth, you know?
Literally. That's how close he's sniffing, he talking to everybody.
Yeah, he knows what you had for breakfast, he knows what you had for dinner. That's how close he's talking to you. And then I like that she doesn't always like back down from him and like cower or just like is a blushing kind of thing. Because her character Jenny has known him since they were kids. Like, she knows what he really is like. And that's the thing I liked, like, the most about their story, is that not only is she the one who, like, kind of got away from him, but she's the one who calls him out on his shit and, like, knows that this is all just a front and that he's just pretending and is scared and of, like, getting hurt and all that kind of bullshit. How did you feel?
Yeah, and she's also sharp. Like, she's...
Yes.
She's quick. Very sharp. There's a few moments where she says some disparaging things about other women, but that could just be the bad writing, or it could be, you know, a character flaw. She's very smart. She's very, when someone's good at a lot of things, competent. She is, you know, beautiful. She's charming, but... Like, okay, if she has to have a character flaw, maybe she's a little bit arrogant. But I actually kind of like that. And then you see, their banter is really good. She's just quick. There's one part where he's like, well, I'll be damned. And she said, you probably will, or something like that. You probably
I was are. Just about to say that, too. He says, I'll be damned. And she goes, that's probably true. Anyways, we have this. Like, she just threw it out there. And she's like, okay, back to business. Because he's just disrupting everything. Fucking coming in late. And taking
Connor
time.
Disruption Mead. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And I feel like, did I write something else about one of her lines? At one point, she just got too many.
Too many what?
Like, she had too many good lines. I couldn't keep up with, like, writing them down. Yeah, I like what you were saying about, like, I attribute some of her disparaging things that she says about women to be... the writing, mostly. Not that she probably isn't, because there are women out there who think that they're better than other girls and hashtag not like other girls, you know? But she definitely sees herself as better than all the girls who, like, fall for his shit. Which is probably, you're right, like, a character flaw.
Yeah, she's the only woman I just realized in the movie who's given a career that we know her, what her job is in the whole movie.
The only other women that
except
we know.
Except for his assistant, Melanie.
Yeah, except for his assistant. And then there's like a montage, I think, in the ghosts, still in like the ghosts of the past ghosts. Oh, yeah, because Emma Stone attendant. Is the one who shows him. Yeah, so there's the flight attendant. There's the girl who was washing his car or a mechanic or something.
Right.
So like the only way. The only reason why we know what their jobs are is because we, as the audience, had to know where he had sex with them.
Oof.
So she's a flight attendant because they had sex on a plane. She was a mechanic or she was a girl who worked at the car wash because he had sex with her while she was washing his car. So stupid.
Did you see how those women are credited on the film as well?
I saw a couple of them. I saw an Asian bar woman, which is the only one, the Asian woman who spoke in Cantonese or something.
Oh, yeah. Which, yeah. Anyways.
And they're like, of course the line is, you have brought dishonor to my family. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Okay, here, let me give you a little flight.
Okay, Mulan.
what these names are. We've got Ice Cold Blonde, Slapping Brunette, Blonde Club Model, Brunette Club Model, Amy the Stewardess, Bar Twin, and Other Bar Twin, Chinese Bar Woman, 2 Days Bar Woman, For an Hour Bar Woman, 48 Seconds Bar Woman, In Your Car Bar Woman, On Your Car Bar Woman, and the list goes on. Yeah. Like, I'm maybe halfway through. I'm gonna leave it, though.
When they did that shot of, like, he was like, how many more there are these? And it does the shot of, like, the endless hallway of all of his girlfriends. I said, ew, that's gross. Get yourself checked.
Yeah, but that's also, like, I get that they did it for effect. But, like, bro, are you doing anything else then? Because right? How old is he supposed to be? Like, mid-30s?
That's what I'm saying also. They have to be, like... If Jenny's a doctor and they're like the same age, they have to be in their 30s. Yeah. And he's having this much sex in his 30s? He's just going around and be like, ay, sex. Just like everywhere he goes, ay, sex, ay, sex.
He hits him with the whoa, whoa, whoa face.
Yeah.
And they're just charmed.
Classic McConaughey face. So... you said that he, at the, like, kind of rehearsal dinner, he upsets everyone. He's drinking scotch, not eating anything else. Mm-hmm. He is ranting about love and weddings and marriage and why can't anyone just enjoy casual sex and what's the harm in that? And is very abrasive. Jenny's like, get out of here. And then he goes up to his room and then he sees, oh, well, he has, like, a bunch of conversations where he hits on the bride's mom. He solicits her. She's like, no, thank much appreciated. No, thank you. And then he runs into one of the bridesmaids and she's very much like, please. So he tells her to go upstairs. He thinks she's upstairs when really it's the ghost of his first girlfriend or his first like sexual encounter, who happens to be Emma Stone, dressed in a very 80s outfit and the biggest braces I've ever seen.
Acid. Yeah. She was wearing an acid wash oversized denim jacket and scrunchies and a perm and
scrunchies and a perm and a skirt and like leg warmers. Yeah.
Probably.
She was very
really
probably. She was very funny. I enjoy Emma Stone and kind of anything. I appreciated that she was in this. She's so funny. She has a big
brought the
nice
energy
expressive
up.
Face.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah. I love her face.
Yeah. So she takes him back to his past, because she's the ghost of girlfriend's past. We see a scene where little baby Connor gets his first camera as a gift from Jenny, and he takes his first photo of Jenny, and then that's why he became a photographer. And you see them falling in love, and then we jump ahead. There's a time jump, and they're at their eighth grade middle school dance. And he's about to dance with Jenny. He's about to ask her, but then her squealing friends, again, written by men, just girls talking in a pitch that's like up here all the time. Like literally squealing. I was a teenage girl and I've never said something like, oh my God, he thinks you're cute. Like that. Like, I've never done that. I've not really heard. And then screamed. And like, that happens in TV and movies all the time. And I'm like, I don't know these girls. I know girls. They talk to you like you're scum of the earth. Especially teenage girls sometimes. They're like, okay. Rarely are they squealing.
Okay, weird that you're talking to me, but whatever.
Exactly. Like, you're still here? Yeah. We were talking. So her friends tell her that the hottest guy in ninth grade or whatever wants to dance and make out with her with tongue. And Jenny looks back at Connor. Connor chokes. And she's like, okay, I'll go dance with the guy. Which, Jenny, good for you. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. As is your right, babes.
To think that one singular moment was the thing that made him go down this path of being like a ne'er-do-well and like everyone's like, oh, Connor, he sucks so much. Hopefully he can change one day. They all hate him. He's like, oh, he's such a bad person. All the girls that he's dated hate him. So all of this like trajectory that he's put himself on happened because one time at a dance, the girl who he was kind of, who he liked but wasn't officially dating, danced and made out with another guy, and then he just thought it's almost like that was his villain origin story. And it's like, bro, that, yo, like, let it go.
Yeah, literally, he couldn't handle.
She lives next door to you, just go ask her if she wants to go for a bike ride or whatever, like fucking eighth grader stew, I don't know, shit. Go ask her if she wants to buy like a bag of chips from the vending machine. That's pretty sure that's what we did when we were in eighth grade.
So like, by this time, oh yeah, so the reason why he was kind of raised by, him and his brother were kind of raised by Uncle Wayne is because his parents died in a car accident, because of course, rich old parents and you're a little baby orphan because your parents died in a car crash. Mm-hmm. Had, I think, little Connor Mead gone home and he was sad about this, if his nice, respectful dad was like, son, sometimes we get rejected. You should just go out tomorrow. Try again, ask her to go for a bike ride, all that stuff. Connor would have been like, you're right, Dad. But because Uncle Wayne was the one raising him and like driving him around in his stabbing wagon. Oof. Literally, I saw the license plate. I guess
Shaggin' Wagon was trademarked or something.
I guess so. Yeah, I didn't understand why he was stabbing. Is he stabbing with his penis?
With his sword?
Lord. Yeah, because Uncle Wayne's like, you know what, kid, you never want to feel like this again, let me tell you how to manipulate and use women for your own benefit. And then apparently he homeschooled him for 2 years in Las Vegas. That was what happened.
You know what, and just then occurred he came to back me?
What,
this whole time Connor's on this rant, what's wrong with being single? Why does everyone think there's something wrong with me and I'm missing something in my life? Blah, 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 blah. What's wrong with casual sex? He's, like, saying all this stuff, and it's like, hold on a second. But we know that you did all of this to avoid having feelings. And you know that. And we know that. So what is all this blustering about? There is nothing wrong with being single, Connor. There's nothing wrong with casual sex either. What's wrong with what you're doing is that you're a dick. It has nothing to do with the other things. Damn.
I like when one of the girls, oh yeah, so this jumps, we see all of Connor's past, we see how what's it called, he gets hurt and then Uncle Wayne teaches him how to be a Lothario, and then we see him
in casual use of the word Lothario.
Oh my God, thank you. And then we see him come back to whatever high school or whatever that they're at. And then he's like so over Jenny. He has Duran Duran hair. Doesn't give a shit about her. Has sex with Emma Stone for the first time. And then they reconnect later in a couple of years when they're like both adults and he has weird long hair and he looks like a pirate, according to Jenny. And then he's like, let me take you out. And she goes, okay, you will, but I'm not going to sleep with you. Because she, one, we remember, let's say it all together, she's not like other girls.
Other girls, right.
Other, thank you. So she
knows that she's going to go see Connor, but she's not going to, like, give him what all the other girls give him right away on the first date. So she makes him work for it. And then they finally get together. They go, like, weeks on dates. And then they finally sleep together. And then that's when he starts to get up. And that's when she says that line. There are girls who you shag and leave. And then there are girls who you shag and cuddle. And I am a shagging and cuddling girl. And he's like, okay, Jenny. Gets back in the bed. gets back in the bed and then immediately panics and leaves because he's like, uh-oh, I'm cuddling. And according to Uncle Wayne, that's the worst thing you could do. So gets up, leaves, is scared of his own fucking emotions, is scared of getting hurt again because what if she leaves him? He's a little bitch baby and then leaves. And then we see all of his girlfriends, all that kind of stuff. And then we go into his ghosts of girlfriends present, who happens to be the ghost is his assistant. And his assistant is hosting a martini night with the girls that Connor had broken up with on the conference call.
No explanation.
No explanation as to, like, does she do this all the time with all of his girlfriends? Did she just feel sorry for this particular one? Also, I think the most offensive, there's a lot of offensive things in this movie. The most offensive thing, I think, I heard was her say, I have different kinds of martinis, a tandoori martini. A tandoori martini? You're going to have the heavily accented Indian assistant offer somebody a tandoori martini, and you're going to have her say, it sounds bad, but it you can't feel your face after two? That's not funny. That's racist.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense.
And it just wasn't, you know, sometimes there's jokes that are a little bit edgy, but they're worth it because they get the laughs.
Yeah, that one was, I like, love those.
So lackluster. I just, did anybody laugh ever in the history of time at that joke? God, did they even laugh when they were writing it? Like, did they, you know what I mean? I feel like it's one of those, they just cranked it out, like they ground it out and they're like, ugh, we gotta have a joke. I don't know, make it something about Indian food. I don't know. Like,
they literally were like, oh my God, we haven't brought up the fact that she's Indian in this one line of hers, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's the most offensive thing. What was my point of bringing up this thing of the ghost of girlfriends present? Oh yeah, so he just sees that everyone hates him. And then we have a funny scene.
And then he goes out into the street.
Oh yes.
And Uncle Bruce Wayne brings him down and he whips out an umbrella and Matt McConaughey goes, what's up with all the rain, fella? And he goes, oh, these are all the lady tears of all the, these are all the lady tears that have been cried for you in your lifetime. And it's like a deluge, absolute downpour. And then it stops and then these little tissues start falling from the sky. And he goes, these are all the tissues that they use to dry their tears. And then he goes, these are all the chocolates that you sent them afterwards, and nothing fell. And then he goes, that's right, you didn't send them chocolates. And he goes, because it goes straight to the hips. And he goes, that's right, I'm doing them a favor, basically. And then he goes, and these are all the condoms that you use. And you just hear, like, the cartoon anvil falling sound from, like, Roadrunner. And he dives into the car to escape being drowned in a pile of used condoms or something.
Yep.
That was bizarre.
That was very bizarre. I was like, what a scene. What a scene for Michael Douglas to be in, you know?
Yeah. Quirky.
I couldn't remember if we actually saw all the condoms and his shplunk rain onto the car. I don't know why I thought it was gonna happen, but it made sense that it did it. They didn't actually show it, because then that's not rom-com territory, you know?
Yeah.
Especially like 2009.
Yeah, I think it would have been a bit too far. And it was also a good opportunity for a transition, because it's like, what else? Oh, right, because then he goes into the house and he hears all the people shit-talking him.
Oh, then, yes.
And then we have Paul, who's his younger brother, who's getting married, say, like, man, you guys, I get it. He sucks. Guys, doesn't he suck? But he's my brother, yo.
He said all fair points.
All fair points. Even though all you guys are right about how much my brother sucks, he's still my brother. That's family. You know, so I have to believe in him because or else it's going to be a very sad world, basically. And actually, yeah. He did say some sweet things. And I got to say, I hate to admit it, but I actually teared up a little bit when Paul was giving his speech there, because he was talking about, like, he was like, that's my brother. He was there for me. Like, he never got the chance to be a kid because he was raising me when I was, he was only 7 years old. And he would defend me every time a bully picked on me. And he did this for me. He did that for me. He said it was us against the world. And it's like, oh, man, that's like a little bit of a tearjerker. I was like, I'm crying at this movie right now.
I know. I, because I think Breckenmeyer is very good.
Underrated.
A la his work in Garfield, the movie.
Oh, Garfield, colon, the movie.
Literally.
Garfield in brackets, the movie.
But yeah, no, Breckenmeyer is very good. So he delivered that very well. And like, what also was nice is Matthew cutting to Matthew McConaughey and him being like, oh shit, someone like that is my baby bro and he's talking about me, mm-hmm. and all of these people were just ragging on me. And maybe that's why I don't believe in love, because no one loves me enough and I don't love anyone enough and love is painful. But then his brother is talking about it and he's like, oh, love is really nice.
Yeah, and actually I'm glad at that moment that they had the ghost of girlfriend present? Girlfriend present?
Mel?
Say like, oh, that was really nice, but you're probably unmoved by that because you don't believe in love, right? And I was like, oh, like, thank you for taking... This is one of the things that I thought was good about this movie, is they took a second to be like, this is a rom-com, it's all about romance, but also let's acknowledge the other types of love, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, familial, like, love between siblings, parents, and children, this is equally as valid, and, like, he did take a moment to pause about it, and that is... turns out that was the main thing that had him in the end, kind of his come to Jesus moment, was spurred by thinking about his brother's future, right?
Yeah. Yes, which I agree. So that is one of the things I like, and I think that like grounds the movie and the character a lot. One of the things I wanted to get into was like, in the end, Connor realizes that like kind of love is real or love exists or whatever, and like the big grand gesture in this movie is not Connor chasing after Jenny. It's Connor chasing after Paul's fiance after she finds out some news. Yeah, after she finds out some news that Connor let slip that one of her bridesmaids had slept with Paul. Like when they first started dating, this was like weeks into them knowing each other. And she had only just found out and she's like, you cheated! And she was really upset and left and called off the wedding. And... Connor's big grand gesture was not running and finding Jenny and be like, give me another chance. It was him running after the fiance and saying like, love is hard and it's scary. And I know the reason why you're running away is because you are scared, because you already forgave him. Like, you're not that mad at him. You're just worried about what this means in the future of like the idea of losing him and all that kind of stuff, because you're not even mad at your friend who slept with him. You're not even really mad at Paul. So like, he says these things and like that I found refreshing. But having this be like his brother and his fiance's kind of like love story be kind of the thing that gets Connor there, I wish that we saw a little more of Connor and the brother like interacting as they were growing up, you know?
Yeah.
Cause like it was all just told to us by Paul. We didn't see it at all. We saw more of him and Jenny, which is fair, and then we saw a lot of him and Uncle Wayne together. There was not enough like of the somewhat of what's his face, Connor raising Paul like he said he did, you know? Not that it didn't happen obviously, but like it would have just solidified it a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, it would have been a nice show don't tell moment to see that, because then it would just have driven it home when Paul gave his little speech, right?
Yeah. So the other thing, so I found that refreshing. I like that aspect. The thing I am like so tired, I think, of seeing is like men, like what makes a man is when he loves a woman and he changes for the love of a woman. Like, you know, becoming an honorable, like you always hear like in movies and stuff, men say she made a man out of me, or like she
made me an honorable man by, like, loving me and marrying me. And it's always, like, on the mm-hmm. woman to kind of, like, catch the guy and settle him down and make him, like, a serious man. And that's the only kind of thing that would make a man, you know? It's not on mm-hmm. his own being like, wow, I'm hurting people.
Yeah.
I'm hurting people in their lives and I'm having this, like, I'm just going around being shitty and inconsiderate of people instead of him, like, sorry, hold on, I'm mixing up my words. I wish he realized that instead of only being like, oh, I hurt this one girl who I really, really care about and I should change for her. I will do better for her because I love her, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And it's also like a lot of the time, the problem with that dynamic is that if a woman has to like chase down a man and nail him down and all this, then the man is expected to change.
Exactly. And
it's like this whole thing of like, y'all, why are you both fighting so hard to make, you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Exactly. And like,
now she this says is that. Obviously this is about character growth. So yeah. This is maybe that point that I just made is perhaps beside the point. I just really, I think that this premise fit the framework of A Christmas Carol very tidily and nicely. Like,
yeah.
That is one of the things that I think it has going for it. And to that point, the main thing about The Christmas Carol is that Scrooge has a realization about the way that he treats people is wrong and he changes. So that's the whole point. Change, character growth. So mm-hmm. we see that mm-hmm. here, however it may come.
We do. Which, thank God he gets there. When he, so we, like, Ghost of Girlfriend's present was not that long compared to the past one. Mm-hmm. And then we move, when things come, when all the big blowout happens. Also, we didn't even talk about one of the funniest scenes where he destroys the wedding cake.
Bro, I hated that scene. I had to skip
Did
forward.
You?
Yeah, I couldn't watch it.
It was obviously awful to watch because, like, he's trying to save this cake that he, like, knocked one of the legs over. I enjoyed it only because Matthew McConaughey is very funny when he does, like, physical comedy. He makes a lot of, like, exasperated kind of noises. It was very funny when he's holding up the cake and he's trying to reach for the bottle to, like, replace the thing. He's going, ah!
And that face that he does, the...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The kind of shocked turtle look.
Yeah. He was doing a lot of that in that scene, and I found that very funny, and that's the only part I enjoyed about it. Everything else was awful and very cringy.
And then, is there anything else that happens before the Ghost of Girlfriend's future?
Oh yeah, so they have the whole big blowout where Sandy finds out that Paul slept with his bridesmaid and then she calls off the wedding and it's a big disaster. And then Sandy is fighting with Paul, Connor's fighting with Jenny. It's like the four of them all talking to each other. Also, can I say that we don't know how Sandy and Jenny are friends?
Yeah.
Sandy was never in any of the flashbacks. Her relationship with Jenny is never explained. If anything, Jenny should be Paul's best man, you know?
Yeah.
She was there growing up. Like, she should be as the groomsman, you know? We don't know who the fuck Sandy is. But anyways, that's something I noticed where I was like, I don't know who these bitches are. Also, I barely know the names of the bridesmaids. They were all D names.
For Dick. Daphne, Deanne, Deandre.
And Denise.
Dorothy and Dumbo. Denise is actually one of them. You're for sure right for the Denise part.
I know. I thought you were actually saying the names.
No, I forgot them also. Except they're for sure Denise. Donna?
Yeah. Donna? Probably. So yeah, they have the big fight.
Denise,
and then
Donna,
brother,
and Dina.
His brother was like, Polly was like, get out of here. Shoo, go on, get. And get. Then Connor Mead was like, fight. Nobody wants me here. And then so he tries to leave. And then the Ghost of Girlfriend's Future shows up. And she's this beautiful, ethereal, supermodel girl dressed in white.
It's Kristen Kreuk in a blonde wig.
Kristen Kreuk!
Don't you think she looks like her?
She did. So then she shows him how sad and shitty his life is. And like no one will miss him. No one will mourn him. His brother is the only person at his wedding. Jenny gets married to very handsome.
At his funeral.
Oh, sorry. At his funeral. There was no one at his wedding. Jenny gets married to beautiful Brad, who, like, Jenny deserves to be with Brad, okay?
Yes. Brad the Catch, who does...
Brad the Catch.
Like, Doctors Without Borders, Colombian Dancing, Shiatsu Massage. Yeah. Brad does it all. So...
Also, that's one of the tropes I don't love as much in rom-coms, is when they present an alternative who is literally perfect.
Perfect.
And made for the character, and then she's gonna... She goes... I'm just gonna go with the guy who hurt me a long time ago. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh my god, this perfect, perfect man. Yeah, I'd rather take the day-old cold McDonald's cheeseburger that is my ex.
Bro. So, he sees that. I know, I hated it too. He sees...
Sorry, rage just came up.
I know. He sees their wedding and he's like, nar. He sees his brother Polly at this wedding. No ring on his finger. He's like, oh,
double
nar. Double nar. And then Polly's walking through the woods and then he turns into an old man and he goes to Connor's funeral and nobody, not a single person except for the priest, is at Connor's funeral. And my favorite thing
and
about that
scene
is
like, wow, this guy's a loser. I guess we can start it. It looks like everyone's here.
The priest was like, should we start? And Polly's like, yeah.
Yeah, let's go. Get this show on the road.
And so he's like, oh, no, I'm going to be by myself. I'm going to die alone and sad and lonely. And then...
And Matthew goes, no! Matthew
oh,
goes,
yeah, yeah.
Troy!
He gets not... Uncle Wayne goes, that's life's Dutch. Mm-hmm. That's life. If you continue this way that I taught you and drilled into your brain, that's what's going to happen. And kicks him into his own grave, and then all the women Connor has ever hurt bury him alive.
Oh, yeah, that was wild. That was a, like, fever dream scene. That was scary.
You know what? He deserved it.
Good for them.
Hashtag feminism.
If it's one thing about me, it's that I'm a bury men alive girly. Like, so scary.
I'm gonna use that clip of you in court.
No.
Nor I told them my motive.
My
MO.
That I put the I would put the MO in Molly. Ow. Oh boy.
So
anyway.
So Connor wakes up screaming after having been buried alive. He rushes, he's like, ugh! Rushes to the window, says my favorite line in the entire thing.
What, you there, boy?
He sees
ahoy,
a boy.
Boy. Poor boy there.
Shoveling in the snow. Shoveling snow. And he goes, you, boy. And he asks him, is it Christmas? And the boy goes, no, it's Saturday. And then Matthew McConaughey looks up into the sky. He goes, oh, the day of my brother's wedding.
So good. So good. I love that scene.
That was like Monty Python shit. That was so literally funny.
Remember earlier when I said that this movie has its merits?
Yeah, that's that the, what I was thinking about too.
is the shining jewel in the crown of this movie.
Oh. That's so funny. You boy. Ahoy. Oh, I'm crying.
Christmas. That's the best part about that is that there's no mention about Christmas in the rest of the movie.
There's
aside
not.
From the fact that it's winter, right? And if you know, obviously most people in the, you know, Western world know what the Christmas Carol is. So, like, you know that there's a very famous scene where when he awakes, he throws open the sashes and yells down to the poor beggar boy, you there. Disgusting boy, what day is it? And the little boy goes, oh, is that? It's Christmas, isn't it? And he goes, I'm not too late. I can say Christmas. Anyways, it's just so funny because it's like, it's just kind of clever. I thought it was so clever. Just to, it's literally like almost like word for word, that they just superimposed it in the movie as kind of a nod to the original text, but that was somehow the funniest scene in the whole movie.
That was the funniest scene. You there, disgusting peasant boy. What date is it, human calendar?
Oh, I missed that. Okay. Oh, I missed that. It's Christmas. How'd you get so rich, mister?
It's Saturday, innit?
Oh, mister, you got okay. a cracker? Maybe a piece of coal for me to burn to keep my feet from falling off. Rough out here for a peasant. Oh, times is hard for orphans, funny. Mister. Sorry. I'm done.
No, I don't want to stop all the improv. So he's like, just great, just in time. He gets dressed mm-hmm. in his tuxedo, jumps downstairs, and he goes, mm-hmm. Polly, time to get married. And Breckin Meyer's like,
let's get checking. Ready to marry. That's the energy he comes down the stairs with.
It's literally, so. He jumps in like, what are those tuxedo shoes?
Yeah.
In like very fancy shoes. He does a hard landing. Half yeah. of the staircase he jumps.
Leaps.
And he's like, ta-da. To his brother. And his brother's like in a sweater. And he's like,
ugh. Yeah. With a clipboard. He looks clipboard. His hair's all fucked up. He's like
crossing things out.
Jesus Christ, what is this energy, man? The wedding's off. It's off.
Yeah. Can't you see I'm in a green sweater?
Can't you see that they're taking down the decorations all around?
What was the word you used? Tore down? Tear down? Can't you see the tear down parties yeah. here?
Yeah. Tear down crew. Yeah, tear down crew yeah. is there. And so, yeah. like, Matthew McConaughey comes down all energetic, and Paul is standing there with his clipboard, basically tapping his shoe, being like, hello, read the room. Exhaustion in his eyes.
After having cried himself to sleep, his fiance called off the wedding and left. And then Matthew McConaughey said, Nor, let me go get her. So then
mm-hmm.
he car runs montage. After... Yeah, car montage. He gets in the stabbing wagon because every car is snowed in and his little mm-hmm. Porsche can't get out of the snow. So he takes the
Can
stabbing
I just
wagon.
Say,
yes. A, yes,
a bit
please say.
Of an oversight. A bit of an oversight to have one of the main points of the movie, one of the main narrative tools of the movie be this stabbing wagon, which canonically does not have seatbelts, and his parents died in a car accident.
I know.
We're just not going to... We're just gonna gloss over that.
Are we? When I heard Uncle Wayne say it in like the earlier scene where he's like, "No, no seatbelts in this car," I was like, "Does he have trauma at the fact that his brother died in a car accident?" And he's like, "I don't believe in love or seatbelts. They don't help or oh, save shit. Anybody. Fuck, fuck seatbelts. Fuck love." That's why he took them out of the stabbing wagon.
And then he just went and did a pile of blow.
Yeah. Went to do a pile of blow in the Philippines.
In the size of a toaster. Such a funny detail.
I know. Michael, I like Michael Douglas in this. I like when he plays,
yeah, me too.
Like, play Hugh Hefner-y kind of guys. Because Michael Douglas is very, that's his thing, you know?
I buy it.
He's very
it,
good
yeah.
at it. Yeah, I buy it. I buy it as well. Michael Douglas is the man who said he got throat cancer from doing, or mouth cancer from doing too much cunnilingus, so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's what he said. And Catherine, that? Yeah, and Catherine Zeta-Jones, his wife, said, okay.
Wait, what?
He I said in an interview... It was like years ago. He said in an interview, like on the red carpet or whatever. I think it was a joke, but then it was the only thing in like headlines for a while, which was very funny.
Oh my god, I do not remember that. That's so funny.
I'll send you the resources.
Please,
the
please
articles.
Do. Send me the literature. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, Connor drives the stabbing wagon through all of the land, not taking any roads, cuts them mm-hmm. off, almost crashes into them. Mm-hmm. How he didn't die, I have no idea. And then the Sarge, Sandy's dad, gets out of the car and he's like, boy, stop. And Connor says, no, don't. Punches. Boy, if you don't. And then Connor
Yeah, he says, sorry, man, I don't have time for this. A little ham sandwich. The 1-2. He gave him a one-piece chicken right to the face.
Yeah, knocked him out cold. Pop right in the kisser.
He said, I don't have time for this. I need to talk to your daughter. And then instead of being like, move aside, sir, just knocked him out.
Just knocked him out. Okay. He punched him and went, I'm so sorry, sir. And then also pickpockets him, takes his keys, locks all the girlies in the car, except Sandy, who had like come out of the car to be like, my dad!
Yeah.
My elderly veteran dad. You knocked him the fuck out.
Yeah, he was in a war. Then, maybe you heard of it. It was called Korea.
I wrote down that line as well.
Best line. Second best line in the movie.
Second best line. So then that's when Connor gives the whole speech about how she doesn't really... She's not that mad at him. She's actually just so in love with him that she's just scared of all of her feelings. And this is what love is like. And you gotta take the risk because I didn't take the risk. And look how I am. Look how I feel.
He did a double whammy with that speech. He won did. Back his brother's fiance to say yes to the marriage. And he also, in the process, won back Jenny because the whole time he was saying, like, the way he convinced Sandy. Is it Sandy?
Yep. Sandy, Sandra.
Anyways, the way he convinced Sandy to get back with his brother was by saying all of the things that he did wrong and, like, all the things that he missed out on. As, like, Jenny is sitting in the car being like, oh, is this fucking play about us? And it was.
Very funny. She was, like, sitting in there between two of the Denises and Dinas and whatever, tearing the fuck up. And they're all just like... Oh. You know what was very funny? He locked them in the car and they were like trying to get out. And then they knew that he was going to like talk to her. So then one of them just puts down the window very like slowly. Yeah, it was like
just a little
bit. Was like, it was like twice. It was like. It was very good. And then he comes back and Sandy runs up to Paul and she's like, baby. And then they get married and they're putting it all together. And what's her face? Jenny goes, oh, we need a wedding photographer. And Connor's like, I know one.
He said, I can fix that. And he did. He's a photographer, remember, throughout the whole movie? That's his whole thing. So he photographed the wedding. Then he takes like a really dramatic photo of Jenny during the wedding. And she's like, stop, take a photo of the people who are actually getting married. God. And then afterwards, he actually ends up giving a toast, which he had said no to earlier because he didn't believe in love. But now he does believe in love. So he gives a toast and it's very cute. I thought it was very cute because he was just being like nice and genuine to his brother. And then at the end he goes, oh, and by the way, Sandy, all I know is that our parents would have loved you. And I was like,
that's what I know.
My heart ventricles seized up.
I know that you had said you had teared up during Polly's speech about Connor. Mm-hmm. And I also was sitting there like, wow. But it was this speech where he's like, that my brother. Yeah, he's like, my brother gives love freely and asks for none of it back. And I was like,
It was just so self-aware and kind and selfless all of a sudden. It's like, yo, where did he was storing it up for 20 years. So it all came out.
He really was. Yeah, he really, really was. And I was like, am I fucking crying at this movie
that
almost had raining condoms?
Yeah, it is a wild ride, this movie.
Freaking roller coaster. But, and then Connor, it's a good party, it's a good wedding. And then Connor meets Jenny on the swing set that they had, like, he had taken his first photo of. He reveals that he's been carrying this photo around ever since she took it. And she's like, you kept it. And he's like, I said I was going to. And then they have a nice moment. he was like, I'll do better. I'll be better. And she's like, fine.
And then they dance to a song, and that's the end.
I think the same song that played at their eighth grade dance or whatever that he missed out the first time. So that was cute.
It was something by REO Speedwagon. I can't remember what the song was, but I remember it was
I believe you. I don't know enough of their songs. I think by name.
I was gonna say, and then it ends in a nice way, and then it fucking ends in a terrible scene where Ghost Uncle Wayne is just hitting on all the lady ghosts who had helped Connor on his journey, and they all like throw drinks in his face or just. My favorite one is him hitting on Ghost Emma Stone, and she's like, I'm like 16, dude. And he goes, we're ghosts, baby. We're ageless. I know it was shitty, but I was like, okay. But that was very funny. The way Michael Douglas was like, we're ghosts,
baby. Yeah.
It was very like he was in a scene in Big Mouth.
Girl.
What?
The fact is that the way you just reenacted that scene made me be like, oh, haha, wouldn't it be so funny? Like, it sounds like you're describing one of the scenes where there's, like, a ghost in Big Mouth. Like, what's the guy in the attic?
It's
the guy in Andrew's attic.
It's Duke Wellington. Ellington.
Yeah, Duke Wellington. It was giving me batuta. We're ghosts, baby.
Okay, what was your question for Moy?
I was going to ask you what was your favorite line from the whole movie, but then I realized that you already answered it. But is there anything else you wanted to say about like things that you liked or didn't like about the movie?
I think I've been saying it all throughout, but I will reiterate. Things I liked. The banter between Jenny and Connor. How mean she is to him. I like that. I like the relationship Connor has with Polly. Wish I saw more of it. I like some of the actors, like Michael Douglas and the actress who played the mom. I could watch a whole movie about her.
Oh yeah. Oh god. Yeah. Let's get some backstory on Vonda Volkom.
Right. Also, Vonda. Yeah. What the fuck?
More like va va voom.
I think that's all I really liked. And then, like, some of the lines, some of the jokes, I've already brought them up. But, yeah, the things I didn't like. Most of the jokes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Most of the jokes I didn't like. Obviously, the rampant misogyny and the pickup culture. That's obviously like, no, don't do that. But like, still, I feel like some men watch this movie and were like, whoa, cool, sick. And then what I also did not like from this movie was any of the women's wardrobes. I hated all of the fashion.
Oh God. Yeah. No. Except for the Ghost of Christmas or the Ghost of Girlfriend's Future. That was like a sick dress. It was like this ghostly, ethereal, long, white, weird thing with a long trail. And I was like, whoa, sick. You look like, I don't know, like, she looked like a windsock, but like a fashion windsock. Yeah. Like, make it fashion. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What did you like and not like?
I liked that they, at the end, showed that, like, Melanie and Brad kind of got together. Melanie and Brad forever.
I like that. It's what she deserves.
Love that detail. It's what they both deserve. And it is. I also like there was one line that I liked, which was kind of like out of nowhere. Like, it didn't add to anything. It was just kind of like funny to me, because there's one part where Sarge is showing them the game plan for the day, like the layout for the room. Yeah. He's using these little army like figurines, and he has labeled each of the bridal party. And so you look at like the little the bridesmaids are like these little army men. And then Jenna goes, "Oh, look, Donna, you got a grenade launcher." And Donna goes, "Oh my god, I love grenade launchers." Like,
I did like that too.
That was just cute. I also like the fact, did you notice that the person who they had playing teenage Jenny is the same girl who plays young Jenna in 13 Going on 30, the adult version of who is also played by Jennifer What's her name? Jennifer
Garner.
Garner. Yeah, JG.
I totally forgot to talk about that. Yeah, it was so... I also couldn't believe that they did it because it was like... I mean, I guess she was the right age for it because 13 going on 30 was like 2003, I think, or 2004. Mm-hmm. And then this was 2009. But I screamed when I saw that yesterday because I was like so happy.
I had to double check. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's her. And it was. Like it some was, casting agent her. In Hollywood is like, yo, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. They were like, everybody already thought that this was perfect. So we're gonna do it a frickin' again. Actually, she when I first got TikTok, she was one of the first ones who came up on my TikTok. No way. Her name is like Christy. Yeah, she's got like a nose piercing and stuff now. Gucci. She's cool. But yeah. So and then what about the things you didn't like? Did you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to go over it again. I said at length.
Got it. What's your rating for this movie?
Right. So my rating is gonna be 3 drinks thrown in the face out of 10.
Whoa. My rating is 3 figless salads out of 10.
Yes, 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 yes. That's very good. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we both didn't like it. But it was fine. It was fine.
It was fine.
And the reason, I don't even think we mentioned this, but the reason that we chose this movie for the first release back is because it's October and we wanted to do 2 spooky movies in the month of October. So, because this one had ghosts in the title, chose this one.
We chose this one even though it should have been a Christmas movie.
Oh yeah, apparently.
Apparently we'll do it again.
Yeah, well, guys, if you didn't get enough content about this the movie The Ghosts, the iconic film The Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, worry not because we'll do a part 2 if you ask.
We'll do a part 2. Molly, where can the people find you on the interweb?
Right. So you can find me at Molly's Outbox on TikTok and Instagram. Kat, how about you?
They can find me anywhere at It's Catherine Ram. And they can also find the podcast at VomCom Podcast on Instagram and TikTok.
Yes.
Hell yeah, brother.
It's our bread and broiders.
It's our bread and butter. I hope that we infect listeners out there to talk like us. That's greatest hope in this life, is to corrupt more people with my stupid mannerisms.
An epidemic.
An epidemic. Okay. Bye.
Bye. See you guys soon.
In your dreams. In your nightmares.
I am fond of you, you know.
And a girl.
I often wish you weren't such a stinker.